I'm Jordan Fiorentini. I'm the winemaker at Epic. I'm standing here today in our barrel room of our winery in Paso Robles, California. And I'm really excited to introduce today's podcast. We have two lovers of football and two of my favorite pitchers, Drew Bledsoe of Doubleback from Walla Walla and Bill Armstrong from State Lines. Before I turn this over to Billy and Buddy, to remind you guys of our Pony Express case. Bill and I put together 12 wines that we hand selected that best represent the variety and the quality of what we're doing here at Epic. And we wanted you to use these wines to celebrate SMU's first season in the ACC. So here's to a great season of football paired with awesome wine.
This is the On the Pony Express podcast, hosted by Billy Embody, brought to you by Epic Estate Wines. Walking strong on the Pony Express, a weekly segment with SMU alum, owner, vintner of Epic Estate Wines, Bill Armstrong. Epic Estate Wines, world-class wines from Paso Robles Wine Country. Learn more, Epic, E-P-O-C-H, epicwines.com. And now your host.
And now your host, Billy Embody.
One, two, three, let's go.
Welcome into another edition of the Walking Strong podcast. I am Billy Embody, joined by Bill Armstrong, and we have a special guest on the line with us on this edition of the podcast, a former number one overall draft pick with the New England Patriots. But first, he was a star for Walla Walla High School in Washington before going on to star for the Washington State Cougars and earning Pac-10 Offensive Player of the Year. Bill Parcells picked him number one overall before he went on a 9-season run with the Pats, leading them to much success before moving on to the Buffalo Bills and finishing up his career with the Dallas Cowboys. We are pumped to have Drew Bledsoe on the podcast. Thanks for doing this, Drew. How are you?
Oh, man, great. Thanks for having me on, guys. This will be a lot of fun. Get to talk some football, get to talk some wine, and whatever else we come up with. But we just go football and wine, talking my two favorite things, which is great.
Boy, I love it. I got to say, I am psyched for this podcast. Drew, you know, I've been a fanboy for a long time. And so for me to be able to do this with you is spectacular. For Mustang Nation, the way Drew and I became friends was his son, Stu, was going to school at Cal Poly just down the road from our winery. And Drew got a hold of us and said, Stu needs to get some experience in the winery. So could you give him a job as an intern? And so he came up here and my awesome winemaker, who you guys just saw in the introduction to this, Jordan, took him to the winery and like beat him up for a few months, and it was fun. So Drew and I and Bledsoe have been good friends ever since.
Absolutely, and for Stu, I mean, what a great experience, man! His first internship, he gets to work with Jordan, and she is just a rock star as a person first, but as a winemaker as well. Of all the winemakers I've met on this journey that we've gotten into wine, I love Josh, love our winemaker, love everything about what we got going on. But I know you have Jordan wrapped up very tightly. Otherwise, we might have made a run at her. She is so special. She is so special.
Hey, this is not the NFL. There's no free agency. None of that stuff goes on here. So Jordan has got, she's super happy, and we're happy to have her, and I'm incredibly lucky. Hey, the reason I like having Drew on here, first of all, we're going to talk a lot of football, which I'm psyched about, but I want everybody to know that Drew has pulled off a feat that most NFL players was able to pull off, where he is as successful in his second career as he was in his 14-year career in the NFL. And he started a winery in Walla Walla, Washington, which is southeast Washington, and he does a really great cab, and he calls it Doubleback, you know, kind of a play on words because he was a quarterback, but then he doubled back to Walla Walla after his NFL career, and he makes a terrific Cabernet, and you started, I believe it was in 2007, is that not right?
That's correct.
And I started my winery in 2004. And we also have a kinship is that we kind of both grew up on the wrong side of the tracks. I grew up in Abilene, Texas, on the wrong side of the tracks. And you grew up in a little farming town called Walla Walla. And yet here we are creating, both of us, you know, kind of a different version of a world-class wine. So it's kind of like the unlikely kind of wrong side of the tracks guys doing this. And I want to make sure I put in a great plug for Doubleback because your wines are spectacular. Hold your bottle up so you can show everybody.
Well, so I'm going to show you that this bottle. This is our new project. This is Bledsoe McDaniels, which is a nod to our winemaker, Josh McDaniels, who I told you is very special. And so we launched the Pinot Project a few years ago in the Willamette Valley, and it's been races already. But, you know, we talked about Jordan making sure you had her locked up. Well, with Josh, he's been our winemaker for a decade. And he does an amazing job for us. So, you know, we take really good care of him, but I also wanted to make sure we really had him locked up. Well, now his name's on the front of the bottle, not just the back of the bottle. So now he's actually married to us. So he's stuck. He can't go anywhere. We actually just recently released our 22 vintage of the Pinots, and they're really fantastic. So in addition to the cab we make under the Doubleback name, and the Doubleback name is simply because I grew up in Walla Walla, got to go play football for a long time, and then doubled back and came back home. It's actually not tied to football. We wanted to make sure that we put the football thing in the background, because you and I know, Bill, like we're wine collectors. In addition to the stuff that we make, you know, there were so many athlete and actor and famous people, you know, wine projects, you know, back in the day, and most of them were not serious projects. Most of them were like endorsement deals. And so there was this stigma attached to jock wines or athlete wines. And I know that because that's how I viewed them. You know, that's how I viewed them. I didn't want to go buy some just because somebody could hit a golf ball. Doesn't mean you know shit about wine. And so we did not want to come out with the first one and put Bledsoe on the front for that exact reason. We wanted people to take the wine seriously first. And then to the extent that they cared that I played football, great. But we wanted people to know that this was a serious project and it was about the wine. Not about just, you know, some hobby from, you know, a football player that wanted to throw his money away. Make sure it was real.
I love that because you are totally right. It was a kind of a lot of an ego thing. You know, it's not Clooney or it's not Brad Pitt or, you know, Joe Montana, or we can go through the whole list of all the, if Snoop Dogg even has a fucking wine, if you can believe that. So I agree with you, and you did it the way I did it, which is from the ground up. And it wasn't just, you know, an ego deal to put your name to get some royalties. It was you were serious about it the way I was serious about it. And I certainly really appreciate that. So one thing I would like to tell Mustang Nation and now ACC Nation, because SMU is now in the Atlantic Coast Conference, is that if you want to see a really good show on Drew's wine journey, it's called Better With Age. ESPN put it out in 2020, and it goes through his football career. And then you talked a lot about wine on that and why you did it. And it was very similar to the reason I did the wine thing and how you know, it looked ridiculous the way you're talking about. You get lilacs and you get, you know, forest floor and, you know, whetstones and stuff. But that's exactly the stuff that I learned. And my friends that grew up with me, like, well, where the shit did you learn that? And but it was real. So anyway, that's a really good. You can get it on YouTube and just type in Better With Age. And my wife watched it last night with me, and she just said, man, this is a really, really great story. So I wanted to throw that out there, which is really cool. But I also wanted, just before we got into football, is talk about the Brady roast, because that was absolutely one of the raunchiest things I think I have ever watched. But you, by the way, came across really classy. I think you only said the F-bomb like four times or five times, which was, you know, way less than almost anybody else on that show. But tell me briefly about, like, I would have been so intimidated to be up there. By the way, were you drinking Doubleback that night? Because I saw you had a red wine in your glass.
Yeah, no, they wouldn't, because we were at the Forum in L.A., and they wouldn't let me bring outside alcohol in, which, you know, somehow Kevin Hart was up there. He was drinking his own tequila, so apparently he smuggled his stuff in. and by the way, that's one of the jokes that I missed in the roast. And, you go back and look at this thing, and like, oh, man, I should have said this, all of these things. But, should have gone with, Kevin Hart. He had to start his own tequila brand, because when he went into the liquor store, he couldn't reach the good bottles on the top shelf.
Oh, my.
Which would have been pretty fun. But no, they wouldn't let me drink double back. But the process, yeah, it was intimidating. You know, got to go do comedy for the first time, and you don't get to go do that in front of like 40 or 50 people at a comedy show. You're in front of millions of people on live on Netflix. But I was prepared for it. I was kind of nervous, but I don't think I was nearly as nervous as my family. You know, my kids each individually called me like, all right, Dad, what are you going to say? Cause all they'd ever heard from me is bad dad jokes and inappropriate comments at the wrong time. And so they were very nervous that I was going to embarrass the whole family. So they made me, but it was good. I got reps cause I had to practice the material on my kids before they would sign off on me doing the thing.
There you go. Spring ball. So for Mustang Nation, just so you know the type of show it is, here's the one joke that stood out for me that Drew said at the very end of his little deal. He said, Tom, I'm not positive if you're gay or not, because I'm not sure what happened to the other guys in the NFL, but you certainly fucked me.
Yeah. He's the world's worst backup quarterback. You know, like quarterback. Supposed to go sit back down when I get healthy. He didn't understand that piece of it.
And you originally just thought he was going to come in and just sit there behind you for the rest of your career.
I loved Tom, loved him from day one and still do. But, you know, looking at him at that point, I figured he was going to have a long career as a backup. Had no clue. I don't think anybody else did that he would go on to the great success that he had. But he always handled it with great class and continues to do that. So,
well, I would say the same for you, Drew. I mean, you've handled the whole thing with such class, and it is one of the great. It's kind of one of the great kind of Shakespearean kind of quarterback drama stories in the history of the NFL. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, it is. It wasn't very much fun at the time, but in retrospect, you know, it's interesting, Bill. You know, you. There was a great quote. I don't know if you've ever watched the Eagles documentary. If you haven't, it's great. But there was a great quote from Joe Walsh in that. He goes, you know, when you look back at your life, you know, it looks like this, you know, script that's been written and carefully crafted and planned out. But in the middle of it, it's chaos and pain and all of these things. And then you look back at the end of it. And that's kind of how that was. You know, I feel like I handled things the right way and don't have any regrets from that standpoint. But in the middle of it, man, it was pain and agony, man. It sucked. You know, it was like, you know, like that's my job, and that guy's out there doing it and they're having success. And so it was very bittersweet to go on and win that Super Bowl, because, you know, I was very happy for my team, my teammates. But for me personally, it was painful as hell to not be the guy on the field when that happened. But, you know, now I look back, I wouldn't change anything about my life. You know, like you said, we grew up on the wrong side of the tracks. My brother likes to point out that you can call both of us trailer trash, but Drew actually lived in one. My first home had wheels, sat on some really nice cinder blocks. But, you know, you go back and look at your life in retrospect and you know, there's not many things that I would change, because I'm in a spot right now that I really, truly appreciate.
When you retired, you were fifth in NFL history in pass attempts, completion, seventh in passing yardage, 13th in touchdown passes. When you went to Buffalo, that bounce back season you had to go to the Pro Bowl, what did that mean to you just now that, like you said, you can look back and it's another story of just being so resilient? And look, you made a lot of great friends, I feel like, with the fan base in Buffalo, just how you handled yourself there.
Yeah, that was a fun year, man. It didn't end the way we wanted it to. We kind of faded late. The wrong injuries at the wrong time. But, you know, Buffalo is one of those places, and Billy, I know your dad's from Buffalo, and it's one of those places you look at it from the outside and you feel like, oh, that's being exiled to Siberia. This is going to suck. But then you go play for the Bills and you just immediately fall in love with that fan base and everything that they're about up there. That was a meaningful season. It was a heck of a lot of fun, you know, being there, and we had a good run. My single season passing yardage record stood until like 2 or 3 years ago when Josh Allen took it down, even with all the yards they throw for these days. So, wow. So it was, uh, it was, uh, yeah, it was, it was fun, man. It was a cool career. You know, obviously you always look back and wish certain games had gone differently, but what a privilege though, to be able to do that. You know, people, you know, at times like, man, that must have sucked. Like, what are you talking about? It sucked. You know, I was getting paid to play a game. And that's the dream that most kids in the world grow up with. If you get paid to play a game, you don't have the right to complain about life not being fair. You know, I loved it. Even when it was hard, I loved it, because fighting through, you know, adversity in front of a lot of people is such a cool challenge. You know, I just loved everything about it. I really, truly did. And I look back on it with just nothing but great memories. Plus, you know, Bill, you know, we get older, our memory gets very selective. I only remember the good shit now. I don't have to remember any of the bad plays.
Well, that's exactly right. And so, but again, Mustang Nation and ACC Nation, you can see why Drew Bledsoe is still one of the class acts to ever play in the NFL. All right, let's talk a little college football.
Yeah.
As you know, the turmoil in college football is ridiculous with NIL, the transfer portal, and then this whole restructuring of the conferences. I thought this time last year, I was convinced that SMU would be in the Pac-12, and that would be our best case scenario of getting into a P5. And then the whole world explodes like a nuclear freaking explosion. SMU winds up in the ACC. Pac-12 becomes the Pac-2. And how do you feel? You're a Washington State guy. I mean, that has to be.
You know, my biggest feeling is just sadness. You know, I mean, it just there's so much history in these old conferences. You know, my dad played for the Washington Huskies. You know, I played for the Cougs. My brother played for the Colorado Buffaloes. My son played at Washington State. You know, so we had three generations just in our family of well, my dad the Pac-8, me the Pac-10, my son the Pac-12. And then to see that just go away, it's just so sad. And it's just mismanagement from the very, very top levels. You know, it's not even it's you know, it's the university presidents. It's mismanagement of the Pac-12 as a conference. And unfortunately, the people that pay the price are the athletes and the fans, because, you know, now rather than having all these games regionally, you know, you look at, you know, your fellow ACC teams, Stanford and Cal, who are both within 10 miles of the Pacific Ocean, and they're in the Atlantic Coast Conference. I mean, it just doesn't make any damn sense. You know, there's nothing that makes sense about it. So I, you know, my hope is that there becomes some rationality about it at some point where, you know, I think Chip Kelly said it publicly, that football needs to be separated out and become its own entity. And then the other sports, you know, can still have their regional conferences. You know, that to me makes a lot more sense. But yeah, the whole, all of college sports, man, you talk about some change. I talked to Chris Peterson, who was the longtime coach of Boise State and then the University of Washington, one of the truly good guys in sports. And I asked him if he would ever get back into coaching. And he said, I probably won't, but if I do, I'll go to the NFL, because at least then you have the players under contract. You know, in college sports, they can jump at any moment. You know, it's just, yeah, it's really, really a difficult thing.
No, it really is. It's incredible how difficult it is for the coaches now, because you don't have to just recruit in high school. You've got to recruit all colleges, and then you got to recruit your own guys to keep from leaving. So it's like triple of the old days. And to me, and you're right, the NFL, at least it has some structure. I mean, you know, there's no structure right now, and it's super sad. I mean, Washington, the Cougs have been in the league. It was originally the Pac-4, I think, and you guys joined like 1917 or something into the Pacific Conference, and then now you're in the Pac-2.
Yeah.
You're gonna be part of the Mountain West, I guess, this year. You're playing. I mean, so here's the question for you, for me anyway, is like, if you beat Oregon State, you're undefeated in the Pac-2, and then you have a conference game. It's you and Oregon State for the championship. You beat them again. You're now 2-0, and you're undefeated in your conference going into the college football playoffs. Is that the way it's going to work?
That's it. I don't think they're gonna let. I don't think they're gonna let us in if all we do is, if we beat the Beavers twice and don't win the rest of them. I doubt they let us in. Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs for Washington and Washington State and for Oregon State, because you know they're sitting there and they're already kind of the little brothers in their respective states. You know, with University of Washington having, you know, tons of money, and University of Oregon has all of Phil Knight's money. You know, so we were underdogs anyway, and now to be just kind of left wandering in the wilderness, it's hard. It's hard, and I feel for the athletes. I feel for the coaches. Feel for the schools, so I hope there's a silver lining in the cloud at some point, but I don't know when that's going to come.
I want to ask you real quick, if you knew Mike Leach at all, and got to spend some time around him. You know, I just feel like big negative losses we've had in college football is Mike passing away.
Such a character. You know, he was, his interviews were must-see TV, you know, and he would take them off on tangents talking about Bigfoot or, you know, weddings or, all of those things. He was good for the game in general. He was certainly good for Washington State, and they had some success with him there. Very, very sad to see him pass away so early. He was one of the all-time characters in college football. That was really a sad thing to see him pass.
Hey, Billy, let's make some predictions for this year. You want to?
Yeah, let's rock it.
All right, so I'm going to – why don't I go first just because I'm going to quickly go through who I think wins the conferences and who's in the conference championships games. And then we'll roll into what we think the final four would be. Does that sound like a good plan? So on the P2, I'm going to go Washington State to win the conference.
Yeah.
I look at their schedule, and other than Washington, I don't think they really have much of a schedule. So you're liable to have a pretty good record. And I think you beat the Beavers in the SEC, I'm going to go with Georgia, and I'm going to go out a little bit on a limb and say Ole Miss is in the conference championship with them. So in the ACC, I think it's probably going to be Florida State in the conference, and this is going to shock SMU Nation, but I think SMU will be in the conference championship game because we kind of have an ideal schedule. We only have Louisville and Florida State as being the tough games. We don't play North Carolina. We don't play NC State. We don't play Miami. We don't play Clemson. So we're liable to have a really good if we can stay healthy, we have a really good record. So that's my prediction there. In the Big Ten, I'm going to go with Ohio State and Oregon as my two. So those are my I didn't mention the Big 12 because who gives a fuck about truck stop conference, but if I had to predict that conference, I would probably say it might be an all Kansas conference game, Kansas State versus Kansas. So that's my conference run. What do you think there, Drew?
Yeah, let's see. I'm just looking through because honestly, I have to look at this to see who's in what conference now. That's how
sweet. Yeah, no kidding. That's sad these days.
In the Big Ten, as much as I have just this personal distaste for Oregon, I think they're going to be damn good. I really do think they're going to be damn good. I think they're going to make a run. Ohio State, they're always there, right? They're always in it. In the ACC, I'm probably gonna have to trust your judgment a little bit, with Florida State. Trying to see who else is in there. Is Clemson gonna make a bounce back? They've kind of been down a little bit, and it's kind of a bummer to me because Dabo has been one of the guys that has stayed away from the transfer portal. And he's recruited guys and told them, hey, we're committing to you, we're not gonna go dive in there. And I really, really want that to work. I want that to be a standard for other coaches. So I really want, whether you love them or hate them, I really want Clemson to have success just for that simple reason, because Dabo has made that commitment that we're going to stay out of the portal and not play that same game that everybody else is. I Stanford and Cal, I think, are going to have a, they're going to have a, it's not going to be easy for them. And then, obviously let's go Pony Express. That'd be awesome to see SMU rise up, and have a good run. I'll be very curious to see how our, because Miami, speaking of transfer portal, Miami took our quarterback from Wazoo, and he's a really, really good player. So I'll be curious to see how he plays for him down there. He's a good player, man. I really, really like him. We just couldn't afford him anymore. I mean, it's the name of the game now, right? You know, we were paying him, for Wazoo, paying him a lot of NIL dollars, but a lot of dollars for Wazoo is a drop in the bucket for some of the other big programs. And then the Pac-2, obviously the Cougs are going to win that. We know that. You know.
Right.
We have the Beavers number. The Beavers are probably a better team than we were last year, but we found a way to beat them again.
Love it. What about the SEC and the Big 12?
SEC, I mean, Georgia's the obvious answer, down there, but I'll be really curious to see, first year for Bama without Saban. Mm-hmm. I know the Husky fans, we never feel sorry for them ever, but they were very sad to lose their coach down to Alabama. Funny, my other son, John, works in a real estate office in Seattle. So he's surrounded by all these Husky fans. And he said to watch the change in their attitude from one week to the next, because they were in the national championship game. Like, woo, we're going to win the national title. Our coach is here forever, to get smoked in the national championship game and their coaches leave. They were this high one week, and the next week they were just moping around the office, which makes me very happy. I always like to see the Huskies, be grumpy.
That sounds like another rival of this podcast host.
Yeah, exactly.
TCU. Yeah.
All right, Billy, you want to make a call there, Billy? Oh, I didn't hear the Big 12.
All right, hold on. I'm looking up Big 12. Because I got to see who's in the damn Big 12. I'm being honest, man. I can't keep track of this stuff.
I'm going Cougs to take out that controversy right there. So.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you have to. Otherwise, I'd throw you off your own podcast.
Yep, exactly. Pigeon toss.
Let's see. Hold on. Who else? Okay, we got 16 teams. So you got the Buffs going over there. That's going to be an interesting storyline to see how fast they continue to rise under Dion's leadership. Big Dion fan, by the way. I'm a big fan of Coach Prime. It's funny. We were never on a team together, but everybody that ever played with him, and then you watch what he's teaching as a coach. The prime time thing that you see. That's that's one persona. But everybody that ever played with him, primetime was only for Sundays. From the other 6 days of the week, man, he was a hard worker. He was a great teammate. He was actually, fairly quiet around the team. And as a coach, he preaches character. He preaches all of those things. I don't know if you watched some of the stuff, but he will, if they mistreat anybody that works for him, any of the ladies that work to serve him food, any of that stuff, he will send them packing right away. So I really have a lot of respect for what he's doing. But let's see who else we got. Okay. So Utah is in the Big 12. They're always tough, man. They always rise up. So that'll be interesting to see how they do. The Buffs will be interesting to watch. I don't know. You're thinking it's all Kansas, huh? Kansas and Kansas State.
Well, see, you're now seeing the problem with the Big 12. It's just a truck stop conference. You're talking about Manhattan, Kansas, and Stillwater, Oklahoma, Lubbock, Texas. I mean, it's just like, the reason we're so bitter at SMU is because we should have been in the Big 12, but it was what I call the ugly stepsisters, which would be Baylor and TCU, kept us from getting into the Big 12. So no love lost in the SMU deal.
Right. Yeah.
All right. I'll rapid fire, because people probably don't care as much what I think about all this. But the Cougs in the Pac-2, take it, of course. Then in the SEC, I'll take Georgia, and I'll take them over Ole Miss. And in the Big 12, I will take Utah over Kansas State, Ohio State over, I think I'll go with Oregon in the Big 10. And then in the ACC, I picked Florida State in my preseason ballot, but I'm going to pick NC State to win. And I, there's a lot of buzz in around the Wolfpack, and I will at least, I'll just say that I'll pick SMU to make it, just to make everybody else uniform and happy on that one. But Florida State's going to be a tough one to beat.
All right, I agree with that. They're and I think Miami has got a lot of talent. They have deep pockets, like you said, Drew, and so they've really loaded up on a lot of talent at Miami. So here's what I'm going to go for my final four, and I'll pick my final one. My final four is going to be Georgia, Oregon, Notre Dame, believe it or not, and probably. Trying to think who would be my last pick here. Did I say Ohio State yet?
No.
Okay, those are my four. No. And I think Georgia wins it all. And the only reason I'm going for Georgia, they have a really tough schedule this year on the road in particular. So they're going to get – if they stay healthy, they win it all. And I love Georgia just because they beat the shit out of TCU 2 years ago. And I will always love the Dogs for that one reason. And my winemaker – Jordan is from Atlanta, so she's a big dog fan.
Got it. Nice. Yeah. So those are I can't disagree with any of those. I'm very curious with Oregon. I feel like they've got a lot of pieces. They've got a great head coach. As much as I hate him, everything I hear about their head coach is that he's just an awesome dude, which I wish they would have hired another idiot, and they didn't. They hired a good dude. And they've got a lot of pieces in place. So yeah, I think the Ducks are going to be, they're going to be part of it. The Bulldogs, Georgia, man, you look at how they continue to send so many guys in really high rounds to the NFL and then reload for the next year.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing. It's certainly not something we ever experienced at Washington State. We'd have a few guys drafted and the next year we'd suck. It wasn't exactly reloading. It was like usually like a 3 or 4 year cycle. I'll be curious to see. The one team that I have a personal connection to because one of my kind of non-blood nephews play for is Penn State. See if Penn State is able to rise up again and become part of the conversation. So I don't know if those are good answers, but I'm kind of agreeing with you on most everything.
Yeah, I'll go Georgia, Ohio State, NC State, get a little ACC rep in there, and I guess I would go Utah at that point, or maybe two.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. I'm with you. I like if the Big 12 schedule is what we kind of think it is, nothing crazy, then they can roll through it and. Be undefeated and earn that spot.
Yeah,
be healthy, and then there's also the other, piece where, there's positives and negatives to having a strong or weak schedule, right? If you have a strong schedule, then obviously you have a better chance of being battle tested and getting in there. But if you also have some cupcakes in there and some easy games, your guys come in rested,
So
that's part of it too. But this is the first year of the new playoff format, right?
Yeah, 12 teams. So we picked our final four, but still,
that's good. That's going to be interesting to watch. I do think it should settle some people down. And my anticipation is you come in and you got number one versus number 12, but usually number one versus number 12, that's a pretty big disparity.
Yeah.
And so I think, now there's always the, David can beat Goliath every now and then, but man, that doesn't happen very often. Those will be interesting, but it will certainly make a lot more of the bowl games worth watching.
Agreed.
You think about some of the 12th most important bowl game last year. I don't know which one that was, but I know I didn't watch it. all of those, all 12, you know, or all six of those bowl games in that first round, or excuse me, all four of those bowl games in the first round, you know, they're going to be compelling games one way or the other. And the other thing that'll be nice is I think you'll see a lot fewer players opting out if they're in the tournament. You're going to see guys, you know, stay in, because I think we all understand, you know, with the dollars that are at stake, and you're playing in a relatively meaningless bowl game. I think we all understand, you know, the motivation to keep yourself healthy, because that's a lot to risk for a game that doesn't really mean anything. Well, now these games will be meaningful, and so I think you'll see a lot more guys, you know, opt in to play in those games if they're in a tournament.
I completely agree. All right, well, listen, I think we should wrap it up, Billy. This could go on for literally another hour if we wanted it to. So ACC Nation and Mustang Nation, there's your former Pac-12 first-round draft pick in the NFL. Fabulous vintner of awesome wine, now making Pinot as well as Cab. So make sure you swing by the store and pick up a case of Double Back or Bledsoe McDaniel. Is that what it's called?
Bledsoe McDaniels. Yeah.
Did you know? I mean, the Pat's connection there, Josh McDaniels.
So funny, man. So Josh McDaniels. So you know, I'm assuming most people that listen to this know the other Josh McDaniels. He's the one that's currently looking for a job. Our winemaker still has a job, but they're two different people. There was one wine writer, and I was just like, I was kind of like, dude, really, dude, I mean, just go to Wikipedia or what, you know. But he actually wrote an article about my partnership with the former offensive coordinator with the Patriots and head coach of the Raiders. I'm like, come on, dude. No, they're two different people. But our winemaker, Josh, he's learned the perils of social media because he only gets two kinds of posts when it comes to football when they confuse him with the other guy. One is criticism, like, what the hell were you thinking on third down? How could you lose that game? And then the other one is, here's a video of my son. I think he could play for the Raiders. And he's like, I'm sure your son's really talented, but you're barking up the wrong tree, man.
That's really funny. That is a small world, because Josh McDaniel, I used to live in Denver, Colorado, and he was the head coach for a hot minute of the Broncos.
Really great dude, by the way. I love that. I love that Josh as well. He's a great dude. Just seems like maybe, you know, more cut out to be a coordinator than a head coach. I know they loved him as a coordinator. We actually pitched an idea, and they wouldn't take this up, but I think this would be a cool idea. You guys tell me if I'm crazy. When he was still coaching, if we did a job shadow for a couple of days and filmed it, where the winemaker would go follow the coach around for a couple of days and film that, and then the coach would come follow the winemaker around for a couple of days, I think it'd be kind of a cool little one-hour show where you take the two guys that share the same name and job shadow. I think it'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, you're just trying to create magic at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's all we're doing. Just trying to create magic.
Yeah, magic and buzz.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what it's like.
I appreciate you, Bill. Congratulations to you and to Jordan. You guys continue to make among the world's very best wines. I give Stu some shit from time to time because he worked for you guys, and I think one of the vintages that he worked on, I forget exactly which year it was, ended up on top 100 wines in the world list. And then he actually went over and worked for Full Draw, and one of their wines ended up on top of the 100 wines in the world list. Like, dude, bring some of that magic fairy dust over to the family business, would you? We need your magic touch on it. But you guys continue to just make unbelievable wines.
Well, thank you so much. Listen, Drew is a good intern, and if you want to learn how to make really good wine, you can be an intern for Epic if you'd like to come on over.
Oh, right. Yeah, there you go. Love it. Yeah. I need to. Yeah, I love it.
Well, we can do the Drew Bledsoe roast as the way you did Tom Brady. That'd be fun.
Yeah, there you go. I love it. That's awesome.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Drew. Bill, thanks for setting this up, as always. This is a blast, and looking forward to another great college football season and enjoying some fantastic wine with Epic and Bledsoe Family Winery. So appreciate you guys both. And thanks for everyone who tuned in to this edition of the Walking Strong podcast. For Drew and Bill, I'm Billy Embody. We'll catch you guys next time.
Thanks, Drew.
Right on. Cheers, guys.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks for listening to the On the Pony Express podcast with Billy Embody.
Follow us on your socials on X at SMU on 3 and on Instagram at On3SMU.
And keep it locked to OnThePonyExpress.com for more coverage.